All right, everybody, we'll get started. Thank you for your patience and thank you so much for coming. It's a wonderful gathering we have of beautiful, like-minded people today. And we're grateful to have the space at the Center for Spiritual Living, which I'm a part of the Spirit family here. Dale is a really great friend of mine and speaks as the director here and has a few words to say about community. Just a quick housekeeping tip, the bathrooms are to the left, to the right, out those doors if you'd like. And looking forward to hearing from Brad, and we'll have questions as well. Thank you so much.
Here's Dale.
There I am. I'm supposed to be center stage, being camered. So Vanessa introduced a little bit about us. This is the Okanagan Center for Spiritual Living. It's a nonprofit society, and it's an affiliation of a group of centers for spiritual living that exists around the world. It's become my place largely by process of just happened. I came here about 30 years ago, and I loved what they said, and so I kept coming. As a society, as being a nonprofit, the money that you put in the box at the door helps us operate. We also have another little fundraiser that I like to mention when people come here, because most people who go to Nature's Fair tend to throw away their receipts. Please don't. Bring them here. We have a box. Nice. and another box in the foyer there. Just put them in there. The Center for Spiritual Living gets a small percentage of that. And it adds up. Over the last year, we've managed to accrue pretty much a month of our rent, over about $2,000. So it's gone a long way to helping support us be here. So anything that you give that way in your Nature's Fair receipts, we appreciate it. So I like to share that first. Vanessa asked me to come up here and speak because my background is deeply connected to community. I grew up in Nelson in the Kootenays, and anyone who knows the Kootenays knows something of what that's like. It was a process of growing up. My father was a very spiritual person who started metaphysical classes in our home, and he was also a professor of biology at Selkirk College, and he started something called the Spring Festival of Awareness that went on for about 32 or 33 years in the Kootenays and the Okanagan. And anyway, these classes introduced me to a lot of different people, because he would invite those people within the community of the Kootenays to come in and speak. So the local astrologer, the local tea leaf reader, the local Buddhist monk, the local Anagarika, the local Quaker from the Quaker community. And through that, I started becoming introduced to the idea of community. So I was young then. I started these sitting in on my father's classes when I was 8 years old. And I pretty much grew up in this environment where I was studying communities. And there's a lot of intentional and unintentional communities in the Kootenays. There's Gray Creek area is a whole community of people who arrived there because they just wanted to be off the grid, off the map, and just disappear and be their own entities. And they had the freedom to be a part of the community, as in any small community, while leaving if they chose. And so there's always been some transition through that place. But there's other intentional communities. There's the ashram, there's the Quaker community, and these are very intentional communities. And I looked at them, and I went on, and I went to a community up in the Yukon for my grade 12. It was a privately run school that we rented from the Anglican Church. It had a less than auspicious history, being an old residential school. And so we sat there, and a lot of the people who came to this school came from the native community, and the students ran this school. So that was my first introduction to what it takes to to have a community, to run a community and build a community. We had meetings sometimes that lasted for 4 or 5 hours. I remember one where we talked for literally 3 hours of the meeting about how much toilet paper we should use. Those are the kinds of things that will come up. I've studied many communities. I've traveled a lot. I hitchhiked all over North America and went to different communities of all different nature throughout North America when I was in my younger years. And some of those communities were amazing in their intricacy and their level of elaborate operation, and some were much more ad hoc. I went to communities that were based on the pot culture, right? And I've hidden away where you couldn't find them with their own hydroelectric systems and everything all in place, and you wouldn't know those places unless you were part of that culture. So I've seen several communities like that. I've also seen communities that were more spiritually based, and I had this wonderful chance to look at these communities and see what worked and see what didn't work. And there's a few things that absolutely do not work and do work within communities. Communities have to have some sort of something that people can hold as a higher ideal. There has to be a reason for those communities for them to stay together. And it's not enough of a reason to want to get off the grid, get away from the land, get away from the government, and hide away. There has to be a higher purpose. There has to be a purpose of coming together. And that purpose is absolutely key. And that purpose of coming together is really what it's about. You know, there's a lot of similarity between a community and a family. A family has a group of people who come together. They've really got no choice. The parents had a choice coming together, but the children grew up in this community, right? And sometimes that community was very dysfunctional. And so when they leave that community, that family community, and they go out and they say, I want the real community, they find a group of people that work together, that have a common idea, a common ideal, and they come together, and what happens is all their dysfunctional childhood experiences within family start showing up in the community. And so any community has to have something in place to allow them to work through their stuff.
Right?
Right? That has to be there, because it's going to show up. If you have an issue with your father or your mother, you need somebody to help you to work through that and see that it's your issue and not the person who you're projecting as being your father or mother. Right? So that has to be there. And there has to be a willingness to take ownership for what's going on inside of you. Communities are the very best place to grow in terms of relationship. They're absolutely the best because you are putting yourself into relationship, and not just one relationship with one significant person that you chose, that you already agreed that you could work everything out with. You're choosing a community of people who say, oh, I agree with this concept, so I'm going to sign on this line too. And then they all come together, and suddenly you find you've got 20 or 30 people living in this community, but underlying the ideals of the community, there are differences. And those differences have to have a way of being worked out. Those differences have to be able to be brought forward in some way to find resolution. In some of the communities that I lived in, and I started an intentional community over in the East Kootenays. It was called Columbia Soil, and it was a society, the Columbia Society of Interdependent Living. And we had a mandate within our community to make the East Kootenay area, the whole valley, to make it more accessible to all people. And we had built cabins that were totally accessible to people in wheelchair, to people who were blind. We had trails through the forest that were were navigable for people who were blind and people in wheelchairs. We did all of that stuff. We had all of these opportunities. We hosted conferences. We created a lot of things. We lobbied in Radium, in Golden, and all the way down the valley. We lobbied for accessibility. It was us who got an accessible wheelchair access to the hot springs in Radium. You go to Radium now, you'll see a little thing that you lock your chair onto, and it lowers the person who's into the water so that they can enjoy the heated water, and that's in Jasper and Banff. We did that for both. We created a wheelchair accessible dock that goes out onto Swan Lake so people in wheelchairs could actually go out fishing and fish from their chairs. So we had this mandate, but we ran into trouble. We ran into a lot of trouble. Even though we had this society and we had all of these ideas, it was determined by one of our neighbors, who was kind of a quasi part of our community. He was the mechanic, and he was an amazing 78-year-old person. If anyone's read Warrior something.
The Peaceful Warrior.
The Peaceful Warrior. And he has this person in his life called Socrates. And Socrates is this mechanic who's the wisest person. And I had that. I had him as my wise guide. And I asked him at one point, what's wrong? What's wrong with what we have? And he said, you've got too many chiefs and not enough Indians. And part of this is really important, because when we come to these ideas, when we come into a community like this, we all have our ideas and we all know how we want it to be. And we all see that. And we have to allow ourselves to be the chief in our area and give it over to someone else who's the chief in their area. So everyone has to be recognized for what they have to offer, and at the same time has to be willing to see others as having something to offer. And whenever there's a challenge happening, it's because two people think they know more than the other. Right? And suddenly, when two people know more than the other, you've got a disagreement. And that's where, father steps in, or mother. That old expression, I opened my mouth and my mother jumped out. Yeah, that idea happens for us, right? Especially in community. When we get together, we find that all of a sudden we're looking at our neighbor's kids, our neighbor's children, and we're going, they shouldn't be doing that. And this is my community, and I don't want them doing this. Or my neighbor has a dog, and that dog just ran through my flower garden, and what are we going to do? And we tend to get very angry about certain issues. Usually it's children, pets, and food. Those are the three things that kill most communities that do not have a higher ideal. So the most successful communities that I have seen throughout all my travelings, the hundreds of communities that I've looked at and gone to, have been the ones that have had a spiritual foundation. It's absolutely necessary to be a lasting community to have a spiritual foundation. Evidence of that is the Quaker communities that have lasted for over 100 years, the Dukabor communities that have lasted for equally as long, if not longer. The Emissaries of Divine Light, who back in the 60s set up incredible communities throughout North America, had a spiritual philosophy. I don't necessarily follow or agree with their philosophies all the time, but they have it in place, and it's very important. A perfect example of that spiritual philosophy working for a community is the Jews. The Jews have survived for 7,000 years, 5,000, 7,000 years, and they have survived as a community. And every Jew recognizes that they are a part of a community. And it's because they have this spiritual hierarchy of structure that allows them to go to someone when they have a problem, that allows their community to continue to grow and flourish. And so I recognize that this is paramount to the survival of any great idea. And we're talking about a transformation for the world right here with this idea, with this community. I think everyone agrees, and that's partly why everyone's here. Because we see that this is a possibility to begin a shift in the consciousness of the world. And in order to have that shift in the consciousness of the world, we have to be able to deal with all of these issues that I've just shared briefly and bring them to a place of evolution rather than destruction, right? So we have to have certain principles in place. And the reason that I'm the spiritual director here is because to me, after having studied a number of communities, I said, this is the kind of community that I can work with, where I can work with people who can go to their own home. They don't have to complain to somebody else about the food that they're feeding their children. If someone wants to feed their child, you know, chocolate-coated sugar bombs for breakfast, that's their choice. That's in their world. If they bring their children here and their children are bouncing off the walls, then any one of the adults here is in a right place to say, okay, something has to happen. And we as a community have to figure that out, right? We have to, as a community, have to figure out if we need boundaries. But we give people the freedom to live their lives in their own space in this spiritual community, which is why I am embracing this. And this is why I'm embracing this idea that Brad and Vanessa have brought here, because I really understand the value of creating a society that works on a different level, that allows people to be free entities living their truth within a greater community, where they can be who they choose to be while someone else is being who they choose to be. And so somebody else wants to do something that we don't want. That's okay if they do it for themselves in their space. We in our space want to do something for ourselves. So the highest ideal is love. That's the principle that is going to make any spiritual or any community work. If love is that ideal, then every person will bring whatever the issue is to love. We need to bring it to that place where we recognize that love is the paramount thing. And what does love mean? Love means I love you enough that I am willing to surrender to the higher good of the whole. The Quaker community, when the Quaker community meets, they sit in a circle. And it's a concentric circle very often. And that circle, the people who come first set up and the chairs in the center, and then people bring chairs in until they've got however big the circle is. So they create a circle. Everything is decided by consensus. The whole group decides. And it's not about arguing. It's about presenting an idea. And so they work with this idea where they bring ideas together. And the Quakers have been the most active singular group in the world for creating world peace and harmony and dealing with situations. They were the ones who, when the Iraq war started, went to Iraq and stood on the borders and said, no, we don't want fighting. We're here in peace. They have been advocates of nonviolence, of compassionate communication, of all of that. And that's got to be a key with any group. You have to let go of whatever your antagonistic issues are. I think one of the keys is learning how to communicate in such a way as not to be adversarial. There's a psychologist named Marshall Rosenberg, Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, who wrote a book called Nonviolent Communication. It's often called Compassionate Communication. It's an amazing teaching that they've used between the Jews and the Palestinians for years. They've had groups working with them to resolve issues with incredible success. And so these are ideas. So we have to learn to communicate in a new way. And communication has to be about listening. Any community that works because it has clear communication, where listening is more important than talking. Every communication has to have a common ideal and a common spiritual idea. And every community has to have a compassion and a compassion that remembers that greater idea that brought everyone together. And recognizing that every person who shows up in this community shows up because on some level they agree. Now, it might not work out for them. It might just work out that I've come into this community and I love this community and it's wonderful, but it just doesn't work for me. That happens. And when that happens, we as a greater community have to have the wit and wherewithal to usher them on their way at the highest level, not as an antagonistic pushing them out, but saying, what can we do for you? You're entering back into a world out there that we want to support you to do well in, because we know that you showed up here because you have that. And any community that survives needs to have people in the community who are in alignment with the immediate community. It needs to have that harmony, that place of harmony. So those are some of the things that I've learned from my journey in community and discovering community, and that's what I want to share. And I really want to, I love this because I know that the people who are leading this are discovering a spiritual value that aligns with what they are offering to the world. A spiritual value that says we can all work together to create something wonderful. A spiritual value that says I'm responsible for me. I'm responsible for how I feel. You might have said something that I got pissed off about, but it's me who got pissed off, right? So that's mine. I have to take that on. What you did to you, that's yours. That's what you have to deal with. But what I do, I have to deal with. And I have to own it. And if any community is going to survive, that's where it starts, where we take 100% accountability for everything that we speak, think, and feel. And if we forget that, someone will get hurt, and it will be the one who forgets. So I give you that, and I'm absolutely trusting that wonderful things are happening from this. And as much as I can bless anything, it's not. Namaste.
Elected representatives and international institutions, including the United Nations, and private clubs such as the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection and the World Economic Forum, are complicit in this greatest crime against humanity ever committed. Only the sovereign peoples of this world have legitimacy under these circumstances. The perpetrators, including Klaus Schwab, Prince Charles, Bill and Melinda Gates, George Soros, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and the World Health Organization's Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus and Michael Ryan, the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and UK Health Minister Matt Hancock, French President Emmanuel Macron and Prime Minister Edouard Philippe, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, mainstream journalists and others must be seized and brought to justice in new Nuremberg trials. Politicians, journalists peddling fake news for the mainstream media and others may be granted immunity if they change sides now. Join the people before it is too late.
Well, thank you all for coming today, and thank Dale for opening up his space to us. We've all come together and we are doing this because the government is out of control. There's no denying that the government is, on many levels, causing all sorts of harm to humanity. That's the purpose of this video. There's women and men all around the world that are speaking out about the government, and then they're being silenced, they're being shamed. There's women and men in this room that have been silenced and shamed for them simply using their voice and going to the government or going to whatever agency in disagreement with what they're doing and voicing their concerns about what's happening. And we have government officials that are ignoring us and refusing to change their ways. They're refusing to acknowledge that they are causing harm, and they're putting corporate interests ahead of humanity. That's a big ordeal. And so today we're not coming together We're not coming together to fight the government. We're not coming together to overthrow government. We're not coming together to cause a scene, so to speak. We're coming together because it is our right and our responsibility to create a new government when the government, when we're in disagreement or the government's out of control, has gone tyrannical. And so we have come together. There's some incredible like-minded women and men who have put together a lot of information, and it's found on our website and everything. We'll go over that briefly later. But like as it says here, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish government and to institute new government. And then, so what we're coming together to do, our primary focus is farming and food. That's going to be our primary number one focus in establishing this community. And we're not just creating a community. We are literally from the inside of the system that we have now, we are co-creating an entire new society. We're not asking permission from the government. We're not going to them and saying, can we do this? We are doing it. So we're utilizing, and then education, farming and food, education, and health and wellness, and law. These are going to be everything. We're going to cover, and we are covering, absolutely every area of our lives that affects us and that we need to create something new. And so here we are. We're in the North Okanagan Shuswap region. So we are creating the cohort community starting here, the North Okanagan Shuswap Collective. And this covers Sicamous, Salmon Arm, Enderby, Vernon, Coldstream, Lumbee, and Armstrong. And then within these areas, there's 136,530 people as a populace. And so out of that, we are seeking to get 10,000 members and to do this as fast as we can, to get 10,000 members to co-create what we are establishing, the cohort community. We're looking at getting 10,000 members. We want to do this within this year. And with that, getting 10,000 members, we're establishing and we're forming a guardian body. So there's no hierarchy. There's no one person who's in charge. You could say there's leaders, but we're doing this together. I myself and being the public voice of this community. And doing this. So we're establishing a guardian body of 12. There's 8 of us now, and we're open to anybody joining to become a part of the council for this community. And we're meeting every month, and we're sitting down, we're talking, we're discussing, how do we go about this? We had our first presentation back on February 25th. It was a big presentation. There was a lot more information, and we're going to do that again. But that presentation was put together by all of us, and we brought in new members at that presentation. But during it, there was a lot of questions, naturally. And so there's a lot of questions about different areas, and a lot of it was kind of moot points. They weren't really things to be too concerned about becoming a member. But we're listening to everybody. We're taking in everybody's comments, everybody's suggestions, everybody's questions, and then we sit and we talk about it, and then we implement that. We've already, the agreement that we have in place, we've already done, I'm sure most of you have got the agreements, but we've already done some minor amendments to it, and these are living documents, meaning that they evolve. So as time changes and time continues on, circumstances change, our documents were reviewed all throughout the year, and from everybody's input, from every member during that year, we take that, and then at the end of the year, what we'll be doing is we'll be sitting down the last month and we'll be going over it again, and then if it's needed, we will amend and we'll create a new agreement, and then everybody's gonna have to sign. So doing this signing up, our members, everybody has to sign. They have to sign with their own print, with their own thumbprint, everything. And everything is done in person. This is about bringing back people together again in person and establishing the human to human connections again. That's why we're not doing like a Zoom these presentations. We're not doing them over Zoom. We're recording And then we'll upload it later for other people to look at. But we want to bring people in person together. So membership fees, we're doing member fees. And there's some people who have thought there's a $200,000 buy-in and we're buying land. That was something that was proposed last year and the year before, because there's opportunity in Lumbee to start this, and we were looking at starting it with 100, 150 people to get it going and then to purchase this farm. So we're doing a $350 annual member fee, and that goes, so that's yearly. And what it is we're literally pulling money together. We're pooling money together to purchase a farm. And that's where, at the start of this, we mentioned that farming and food is our priority number one. So we're looking at purchasing a farm. Go to the next slide, Rob. So it's Crepe Valley Produce. This is what we're proposing. We're proposing to buy Crepe Valley Produce. It's in Lumbee. It's an 80-acre farm, and it's got incredible soil conditions. It's an amazing piece of land. But to pool our money together through doing a membership fee, so 10,000 members, that's $3.5 million. We want to be able to go to the owners of this farm. They're ready to retire. I worked there for all through high school, and then I worked there the last 2012 to 2017. And they're ready to retire. So we want to purchase this farm and then set it up so that it's collectively owned by all of us. Every single member has a share in the farm. And so we buy the farm and we set it up so that we're growing organic produce, we're doing honey, we're absolutely anything that we can grow in this region, we're going to grow on this farm. And then every single member in the community, whoever signs up, has a membership, how it's going to work is that we're going to ask everybody, you come in and you contribute time. So this is about creating a society, a system where we're getting away from we digital currency, all that stuff, all fiat money. We're proposing and to introduce that we set up a society base that's based on barter, trade, the contribution of time, and cash, or exchanging your services to one another, equal or greater services. So having the farm, when we set it up and when it's operating, we ask that every member comes and put in 10 hours per year on the farm. So you put in 10 hours on the farm, helping out in whatever capacity that you can help out. And in exchange, you get all of your produce provided to you. Everybody, your produce, get whatever you need for the year, it's yours. And then how the farm operates and how it generates revenue is we sell to grocery chains and and then we have this revenue coming in. And then the farms, how much ever the revenue at the end of the year, whatever the profit is, we take 50% of the profit that stays with the farm for operating costs. The other 50% gets distributed amongst every member evenly. So every member gets whatever is divided by 10,000 members. That's what it works out, whatever's 50% of that. So that's priority number one for farming. We got, you can show, there's a couple photos of the farmland there. That's the field. This is just on the outside of Lumbee. Saddle Mountain's kind of up to where it says like the pond and stuff there. And this idea of like setting up and having this field with a greenhouse established there. This is a great farm because if there's ever something that happens where we don't have power, we can't get our irrigation going, you can actually dam the creek. And that's how they used to flood. They used to flood the fields to water everything. And they got ditches all the way around, so if that's something that ever needed to be done. But wonderful piece of land, and not just this farm. As we evolve and as we progress and get more members, for every 10,000 members that we get, we'll establish, so if we get 20,000 members or we get 11,000, as soon as we get 11,000, we start to establish another council of 12, so that they're looking after that core membership of 10,000. And then that next stage, once we get to another 10,000, so once we get to 20,000, then we go ahead and we purchase another farm, say in Enderby or out in Kelowna or another area where, so that we can start getting everybody in these pockets formulated. So outside of farming, outside of the food, then we have our health and wellness. We have, there's a couple wonderful people in here right now. that are involved in health and wellness and in different aspects. And there's other women and men also who are thinking about joining and coming on. And we want to create our own private health and wellness system where we can go if you have ailments, whatever it is. You can go get your blood tests. You can go get blood analysis. You can go and get whatever we want to look at, like kind of naturopathic sort of ways and get away from the medical industry. But that's another thing we're looking at establishing, bringing these in. Yes.
How many acres is this property?
This 80 acres. So this front field here, this is 60 acres. And then it has, there's a, the barn, it's a big massive barn for storage. And then it's got a whole, they've set up like a whole, there's big massive coolers in there. And then the back here, it's cut off at the creek there. There's another 20 acres in the back, but they've subdivided that now. So the owners live at the front, and then at the back is the father and the mother. So I don't know what they're doing with the back portion. So it'd probably be the front. I would imagine that we would be seeking to purchase. But of course, this is a proposal for this.
So 10,000 members would live on that 80 acres.
No. We're not looking at. We're not looking at like creating a commune or buying land where we can all move on to. We're looking at literally everybody out in society, like wherever you live is where you live, right? That was something that was proposed with the $200,000 a while ago, but no, this is we're just doing it so that we have like the security of our own farm. For our community, you get all your produce. Get all your produce for free. Then setting up health and wellness systems where you can go, and then same thing. We would be looking at purchasing a building so that we could have, you know, set up our own health and wellness industry, so to speak. Us building a building?
No, you said purchasing a building. What about building a building?
Exactly. Purchasing an already existing space or finding somewhere where we could build or something. So priority number one is a farm, and then we would look at, so 10,000 members, the initial 10,000 members purchase a farm. Then the next stage for our initial 10,000 members would be to a building somewhere we can, and we want to also like a building where we can operate out of for our law aspects. We've done law, this is a huge part of this, is the law portion. Devo, unfortunately, couldn't be here today. He's got a family thing going on. But there's many of us, and there's a lot of people that are talking about common and natural law. We're utilizing natural law. We're moving ourselves away from the word of using common law because the government has usurped that, and that's where they've taken our natural rights, and they're making us pay for it to exercise those rights. But we have done... There's some fine gentlemen sitting here at the front. We've held our own courts. We've had two courts, and where we challenged the government, but we held these two courts because we placed claims upon what the government was doing, and they were extremely successful. Yes.
Who holds title to the land?
We all will. Right now, it's owned by the Dolmans, this piece of property, but what we're looking at doing is putting...
Like a communal thing, ownership with everybody who pays?
Literally everybody. Everybody. You can put as many people on title as you want, and that's what we're going to do. Every single woman and man that signs up for this community is going to be an owner of all the properties that we buy. And then we have the security of us being able to go, look, we're all the owners collectively, and this is what we've agreed upon. And then that way we're going to start to introduce through the natural law is that because nobody can actually own land, but the government has claimed that the crown, the king and the queen in England have claimed that they own all the land around the world. And not even natives, Indians, indigenous, anybody. Nobody can say that they own land. It's nature. It's whatever. However we perceive God to be, nature all around us is literally the creation of nature. You can't own it. You can own physical property that we created, like the building, shoes, and your shirt and stuff like that. But nobody can claim that they own the land. So what we're going to turn around and do once we acquire this, once we acquire our own properties, these pieces of land, we're going to turn around and go to the government and claim that we're the settlers of this land. We're the settlers and caretakers of this land. And then we're going to start to move away from taxation and taxes being placed and forced upon people, because that's theft. It's theft of people's of their own finances. And talking about finances, it's important to know that the government is taking, so when you go to work and it comes off of your checks, by the time you've done all of your, paid for everything, bought your groceries, done everything, 54% of your money, your income, goes to taxation, goes to the government. So then, out of that, so a community like Lumbee, any community, Vernon, 90% of your money goes to the federal government. That money, you never see again. You don't get direct services for that 90% of that money that's gone to the government. They use that primarily for the military-industrial complex. They use it for the RCMP. They use it to pay for politicians. They use it to pay for corporate interests. They use it for the advancement of artificial intelligence. That is where 90% of all of our money is going. It's not benefiting you. 10% goes back, 8 to 10% goes back into every community that the federal government takes, and then that's where we're paying for our roads, we're paying for our sewer services, we're paying for garbage collection, that sort of thing. 8 to 10% is all that comes back. That benefits you directly. Yes?
How long will this property be for sale? Like, how long do we have to buy it?
Well, as I mentioned, I've worked with, and I know the Dolmans very well. They're near. I went and spoke with them last summer, and I knocked on their door, and I said, this is what we're doing. I'm going to come knock again on your door one day and propose to purchase your farm. Where are you at? And their answer was, they're not prepared to sell right now. They're not looking at putting it on the market, but they're open to something. And so that's why we're pushing to make this happen this year. The government is already, they're crushing us with what they're doing with the banking industry. They're crushing us with what they're going to do with the digital currencies. So this is why it's a vital thing right now to do this, to make this happen and to acquire this land. And it doesn't necessarily, this is just a proposal. It doesn't necessarily have to be this farm. This is just, I live in Lumbee, and this has been a vision that started out here. Like I said, this is just a wonderful, great piece of land. So if we can't acquire this, we'll just look at another, finding somewhere else. If it's Enderby, or it's, yes?
Well, it just might be a good idea to get a legal title once it is established or whatever over it, right?
Get a legal title?
Get the legal title of the land, so it's, you have a legal title over that asset compared
right.
to how everybody just got equity title over
yeah.
their assets right now. So we're just basically possessing it compared to actually legally, you know, like my truck that I paid for,
yeah.
I have equity title. I can possess it, I can sell it, use it or whatever. But at the end of the day, I don't hold the legal title over it. That's why they have jurisdiction. They're able to come tow your truck away.
Right.
So they can't do that to a free man, right?
No, and that's where, as we evolve, we're to learn all this. There's, Devo's not here today. Devo's a man he's driven since 2009 without a driver's license and without insurance. They can't stop you. If you know the proper wording and the proper language and how to assert yourself, they can't stop you from traveling the road without insurance and without a driver's license. The only way they can essentially legally is if you're engaged in commerce.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
engaged
but
in what, sir?
Engaged
oh,
in commerce. So if you're in business, money, exchange money. So, and that's what licensing is about, was initially about, is commerce. And so for an individual to do that sort of thing, it's a real challenge. I keep telling everybody that we're walking with one foot in the system and one foot out right now. And we need to continue that path of doing it that way. And as we build, instead of one individual or 100 over here, 200 over here, trying to do that en masse, all of a sudden doing it once, because that's like I said, once we get to 10,000 members, that's where we turn around and we go, we're the settlers of this land and the caretakers of this land. And what do you mean you're coming after us and trying to charge us taxation? And then you can also get away from, we can get away from we can deregister, like deregister a vehicle, you can deregister land, get rid of land titles, all of that. It can all be abolished. And that's what we're setting out doing.
Even signatures or whatever titles, right?
There's, I'm not sure of the whole process. There's a, we got others that like know more about that aspect of it, but it can be done and it will be done once we get 10,000 members together or more. And as well, on top of that, politics. Myself, I've never been a political person, but last year I ran for the mayor of Lumbee. And there's a lot of other women and men that decided that out of the blue, they're going to run for council, they're going to run for mayor in all sorts of different communities. I'm not sure that, I think it's Salmon Arm? No, was it Enderby?
Enderby.
What was
Enderby.
The gentleman's name that
Huck.
Got in? Huck, yeah, Huck. There's a man named Huck. He's on the same page as everybody in this room, and he's in there now.
Nice.
And so politically, we get people, the proper people, to get into the positions and into these roles. You can actually take and unincorporate a community, because communities have been all incorporated and turned into a corporate entity. Lumbee, I think it was 2000, it was either 2008 or 2009 when they finally incorporated. So now they're under the grasp of the World Economic Forum and the United Nations and all that stuff. That's what they've got their hands in, and then they've taken the mayors and the councillors, and they're dictating what they're doing in these communities. And then they're not thinking outside of the box. They're not doing anything different. They won't even acknowledge there's different ways of doing things. There's better ways of doing things. So getting the right people in, and that's, I'm still gonna, as this progresses, my plan personally is I'm going to continue on politically. We do have it in our agreement, and the way that it's done in the declaration, the no declaration and no confidence, is we do have it that we've declared that everybody working in government right now, no matter what capacity they're working in, they're literally engaged in criminal activities, like crimes against humanity. It's a serious issue. And it needs to be acknowledged. It doesn't need to be, we don't need to have our focus on it, but our focus needs to be the positive solutions and outcomes, and that's what we're bringing forward. So we're trying to find a way where now we can incorporate, or that's the wrong word, but we're trying to find a way that we can invite the right women and men who are either in government now, like Huff, or who are seeking to get into government, that they can be a part of this, so long as they're determined and they're set that we're going to introduce this whole entire new society, like this whole new system, every level, the everything, farming, the food industry, law, legal, all of it. We're going to change it all. The court system, create our own court system. The courts, that's a big thing. The courts right now, they're set up as a business. It is literally a business where they're. It's not about doing what's right for you or doing what's right for me or resolving anybody's issue. It's a revolving door that they just keep going. They know who's in the right and wrong, but they just keep taking your money, keep taking your money, keep taking your money, keep taking your money. And it's one man or one woman sitting on a bench making a decision. And it's not even them that is making the decision anymore. It's artificial intelligence. AI is rewriting our laws right now, and AI is actually, if you go sit and you watch a judge on a bench, he's sitting there staring at a computer. The computer's listening and doing it all. And then it'll write the decision for the judge. And then the judge will read it out at the end of the hearing.
Siri, everything on your phone is AI.
Well, exactly. Everything around us is like, is constantly listening, monitoring, blah, blah. And that's another thing about this, setting up this community, is getting away from that artificial, like our names are artificial. We're getting away from that and creating real connections. Yes, Julie?
I just heard, I think it was today or yesterday, I was listening to something, that AI is actually making healthcare decisions for people who are in the hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if the AI decides that you've had enough care, guess what? You're going home,
yeah.
You're getting charged $1,800 or whatever a day to stay there.
Yeah.
You got 50,000,
so.
AI, and that's, I learned through my employment with the school district here in Vernon, I learned that AI is rating and valuing our children. I don't even know what that means. All I know is that they're sitting our kids down as soon as they're in kindergarten, sitting them down in front of these laptops. They're being recorded with audio and video, facial recognition software programs. And then they rate and value them, but they won't tell you what the laws they're subjecting the children to. And it's whatever laws that AI has decided upon. And it also goes and ties into the Chinese Communist Party. So all of that, we're trying to untie and untether ourselves from relying on this technology and creating, like I say, the human-to-human connections and what's lawful, just, and right, based on the conscious morals of humanity. Yes?
We've tried to invite our mayor of Merritt to freedom gatherings, and he says it's a conflict of interest, or, you know, he just has this response. And I was wondering how you would respond to that, if he tells you that. There is no conflict of interest. It's the interest of the people.
That's right. The government is the conflict of interest.
But we are.
How would I respond to a mayor saying that to me? That's a tough one, because
it is his responsibility.
He doesn't
want to
take sides.
Exactly. Well, they've already chosen their side. They've already chosen their side.
It's time to move on and find another neighbor.
Yeah.
But like Brad said, it's incorporated, right? So he realizes he's taken his oath to a higher.
He's taken his oath to the crown, and everybody who's taken an oath to the crown is sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
And
secrecy
only,
from you. And I.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, of course, as mayor or going on up, you take an oath to Her Majesty the Queen, right? When you come into that position, so, or the king, or whatever it is now. So,
could you speak up, please?
Sorry, anyone who gets into a position of mayor or working in a, you know, like a typical political position in an incorporated fashion like we see in Canada is going to take an oath to the crown. And so that may be a big reason why he's distancing himself from the so-called freedom movement or people who want to stand up for their sovereignty in Canada, because it's a conflict of interest in that sense. But it's not wrong that he would actually go and hear their mouth, hear their voices or anything. So I think you could call anybody out on that and say, look, this is not about conflict of interest. It's more about hearing the people's voices of concerns of who you're representing. Are you representing a corporate entity, or are you representing the rights of people that have, you know, actually the foundation of the country, or your town or your municipality?
Right.
And actually, you might want to invite them out again and point out to them that if some of the constituents are voting this way, perhaps many more are interested, and perhaps they should know what their purpose is. Because they might want to go that way themselves.
Well, this is again, huge primary reason why we're here is because everybody working in government, I'm not scared to admit it, they're committing crimes, like crimes against humanity.
Absolutely.
And no matter what you say to them, they just shut you down and ignore you because of their job security, because they're the ones that are making huge dollars, lining their pockets. They do close the doors and they hold closed door meetings. That's even been admitted now through the school district with what they're doing, that they hold these closed-door meetings and talk about safety issues because people are coming up to them going, hey, don't agree with what you're doing with our children, with the online information, with what you're doing with Soji, with what you're doing with this. We don't agree. And then they're literally calling the RCMP on us. They're calling the RCMP and filing false reports, which is a criminal act of its own. And then they're going ahead and they're slandering and shaming us. There's a woman in this room right now where they've like put her in the newspaper because she served them with a notice of liability and they gave her a trespass notice. So now they've written that in the paper. And guess what? The paper, what is the newspaper doing? It's using her name and her likeness, her image, against her, not, well, against her, she knows, but without her permission or her agreement. And what are they doing? The newspaper's profiting off of her story.
Wow.
So now it's like they're using her private life and financially profiting.
And creating fear and then for no one else to want to speak up.
Creating fear for nobody else to want to speak up, and then creating a situation where this woman is now, you know, she's being publicly shamed. Wonderful woman, but she's, and if you don't know her personally, you're going to read this paper and go, oh, and they're going to think, you know, without ever meeting her. And that's exactly why we're here. This is why we're doing this. We're not asking permission to do what we're doing. Everything we are doing is within, it's totally above what the government is doing. And it's legal. Like, there's nothing that we're doing that goes against, we're actually utilizing a lot of their so-called man-made laws. We're utilizing a lot of that and putting it against them. I've had a lot of success. I'm really surprised that I haven't been publicly slandered and shamed like others have, because I've really put my neck out there and challenged them to a lot of things. Like, I went to the school district, the board meeting last month. They called the RCMP on me after this trespass notice for this other woman. They called the RCMP on me just for standing there and asking two questions. And I wrote them an email immediately after when I went home, and I said, "No, look, like I didn't break any laws. I didn't do anything illegal. You need to prove it to me if I did. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know.
But you need to prove it to me if I did. And here's what you did wrong. That's actually a crime. It's illegal." And then nothing. I didn't hear anything. I sent it to the RCMP. I sent it to all the school administrators. Nothing. I thought they were going to try to push a trespass notice on me. Nothing. And that was me utilizing their laws and being preemptive against them. And then I went to the next school board meeting, and I thought, they're going to call the cops as soon as I walk in or cause a scene. Nothing. I just sat there quietly and listened. But it's time now to create something new, to co-create something new, to not fight the government. It's gone on long enough. This past 3 years has shown that there's huge numbers. Like, we're not even talking, I don't even think we're talking millions. I think it is billions of people who are not in agreement and who are just done with government. You go and look at when people actually vote, we have 25%, not even 25, it's 23% of the eligible voting populace comes out. And that's how many people have no confidence in government. Like, 75% of us have no confidence in government, that we don't even want to be involved or voting, or because it doesn't matter, because they just do whatever they want to do.
They select them.
Yeah, they're selected anyway. It's exactly right. And then even if somebody does get in, then they're persuaded through whatever cash incentives or finances. So, yeah.
I have one more question.
Yes. We'll take some more. We'll take questions for however many questions there are, and then we'll take a break for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have some food, and we'll intermingle and talk.
I'm curious, how long have you been, like, you mentioned that there's a $350
member fee, right?
So
the groceries are way better.
Yeah. Right? I'm just curious. I think it's a phenomenal idea. Totally, similar to what I was thinking as well. But I'm just curious, is this like a fee that you would pay yearly?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So it would be so wouldn't be an initial fee to help fund to purchase this particular property, and then once that's done, then the work that you do at the property.
It's an annual member fee, because also at the same time, like, people are going to be like, right now, everybody who's involved in this, it's all being done voluntarily. People are going to be eventually compensated for their time. So we've set up, it's written in the agreement, that eventually everybody's going to be compensated in their time at like $30,000 a year, becoming like a full-time, like, this is what they do every single day. And that works out to 12, if you have a council of 12, that works out to $360,000, right? And then the rest of that money is pooled together for making these types of acquiring land, acquiring buildings where we can operate out of, acquiring buildings where we can set up our health and wellness system, acquiring properties where we can hold our own court, that sort of thing. So the first year, once we get to 10,000 members, buy a farm immediately. That's priority number one. Then the next year, the next memberships, like, once everybody pays their membership, then we look at, let's get a building where we can set up and have, like, operate for health and wellness. Let's set it up so that we can set it up for our holding our own courts, that sort of thing. So that's why, as it progresses, that we continue on with the membership fee. Yes.
And homeschooling.
And homeschooling, yes. Education, too. Sorry, I totally skipped out on that. Education is a huge factor in all of this. And I propose to make education, farming and food, the primary education of our system. Have kids coming farming with their parents, or even just coming to the farm themselves and having some sort of setup where there's somebody that's there daily, where they're taking these kids and they're teaching them all about from growing the seeds to all the way up to harvest and everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I propose, is that farming becomes the new education. We have farmers now that are retiring and we're just giving up because of what's going on, or the government's like literally taking over their land and stuff like that. And then we have nobody to replace the farmers. And what does that do? Food is essential to life, obviously. So that's the key right there. Questions? Yes? Speak up, bud. You can ask a question if you want.
Kind of stinks.
Outside? Oh, we'll move you after. Is there any other questions right now? Yes.
So you're doing outreach online as well as kind of community group meetings? Like, as far as how do you get to 10,000, how many do you have now?
That is, how do we get our numbers to 10,000? Mm-hmm. By having everybody who's interested talking about it and going out and telling your friends and telling your family, and showing them. After we have a break, we're going to go over and I'm going to show you the website that we have set up, because it's set up in a way where to educate yourself about.
I've seen your website.
Yeah. Educate everybody selves about what we are doing, and then also about law and about common natural law. It's all set.
And having monthly gatherings and open communication with the community.
Yeah.
All the time. Everything.
Of the, whatever it was, 6 different regions around here.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and moving around, having them in different locations, not just on this side, but all over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're looking at, like, we want to do this sort of thing once a month, but have it and eventually get it where it's, you know, open for our members, and then our members are all giving feedback and we're all talking, we're communicating, and then of course email, having membership email list where everybody's constantly updated with what's happening. Yes.
I'm just curious about the membership, like family membership, like is it specifically just to a couple with children, or can it be a family that
it's 300 it's 350 for individuals and children?
Oh,
like it, and then so like your children are covered under it. So you come on, $350, husband and wife, it's you're each paying as an individual, because it covers all of, like, it's going to be covering like your health stuff and all of your everything. It's all going to be covered for you, and your children are just naturally going to be until they're 18 years.
Your children are adult children, but due to unforeseen circumstances, there's 2 grandchildren and no fathers, but I'm the head of the family.
18
and under.
All details. Yeah, those are all things to be worked out. Like it would be, I would say that we would do it so it'd be like 18 and under.
Yeah,
so that if you,
mm-hmm.
if you got guardianship over them, you know, yeah.
Well,
that's what you're saying.
My
grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So
I
mean,
no, I mean,
more,
but there's daughters,
more,
but I'm
yes,
the head
no.
of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
To go back just a second to your question about how do we bolster our members and get memberships. One of the things that you'll find inside the agreement is that the businesses involved inside are encouraged to extend some sort of reasonable
discount
to people.
Yeah.
I can't really, I'm trying.
Stand up and then you'll be all good.
To address the question about how we can bolster numbers and get up to 10,000 and plus members, one of the things you'll find inside the agreement is that people who bring their businesses into the community as well are also encouraged to provide some sort of reasonable and attractive discounts to offer to the other members of the communities, whereby they can also continue to spread the word just by osmosis of talking to people and getting to know the members of the community and attracting them in this way.
And sharing the benefits of like what's actually in that agreement, because we're doing no taxes, so nobody's permitted to charge any taxes or third-party fees in between member to member. So if I'm doing business with Henry here, and Henry comes out, he does dog training, so if we go, hey Henry, come out and, you know, train my dog for me, he can't charge me any taxes, and I'm just going to give him cash. Or I'm going to go, hey Henry, do you want me to come over and do your roof, and I'll fix your, you know, if he's got a small trade and whatever it works out to, whatever it would have been financially, I'll offer him a service in exchange. And it's kind of like a trade, barter trade, and we have that option between us to make that decision. And then it's up to us if we want to, you know, especially if it's like we're talking a big, you know, say we're doing like construction, we're building a driveway or something like that. It would be up to us to have an agreement in place that we write a contract of our own between us, two of us, that we've agreed that this is what we're exchanging in services, so that if there is an issue, then we can come and we could, if we had to, you know, we could establish a court if we had an issue between ourselves and it could be resolved within the community. So, yeah. I say we take a break and we have something to eat and we mingle for a bit. And then after the break, we're going to go over just a couple more things, the website. And at the end of that, if there are people here today that want to sign on as memberships, we will be doing that at the end.
Court system is not recognized.